English Listening Comprehension Test, Spring 2009, Advanced Level. This test is in four parts. Part 4 has separate directions. In Parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part 1 twice. First, listen to it straight through. Now, we're going to hear an interview with George Clooney, a famous TV and movie actor, as well as political activist.
I'm thrilled to have George Clooney as our guest with me this morning. George, it's a real pleasure to have you here. If you don't mind, let's get right to my listeners' questions for you. Do you think celebrity activism has become cliché?
You don't want to be a spokesperson unless you're absolutely committed to a cause because you can hurt it. I have two electric cars, but I also have a big weak spot because I've flown on private jets. However, I welcome any of these dumb bloggers who make celebrities out to be bad guys to a discussion about Darfur. It's a real crisis center in Africa right now because I've been there and I've met all the players, and I guarantee you the columnists haven't.
After all your advocacy work to help Darfur, why do you think the situation is not improving?
The president of Sudan doesn't have any incentive to do anything else. We can't sanction Sudan because we don't do trade with it. And the president of Sudan can frame any peacekeeping mission as a Western invasion of still another Muslim country. So people like the Chinese, who do business with these guys, have to say they're not going to trade with Sudan anymore. That's what it's going to come down to. Most countries are involved in almost everything they do only to protect their own self-interest. It would be naive to think that anyone is doing anything out of the goodness of their heart. I'm talking about my own country here.
You were vocal about the paparazzi after Princess Diana's death. Who do you blame most for the current celebrity news frenzy?
After all, I'm the son of a television anchorman. My father, Nick, has worked for more TV stations than I care to remember. So I am a supporter of the freedom of the speech guaranteed by the U.S. law. I made a statement after Diana's death. I said that the only thing worse than out-of-control photographers with no sense of conscience would be trying to restrict them. You can't restrict freedom of speech or the press, even if it's miserable.
How did having Bell's palsy affect who you are today?
Well, let me tell you about it. I was 15. After church one Sunday, I was eating lunch. When I went to drink a glass of milk, the milk dribbled down my chin as if my face had fallen asleep. My parents took me to the doctor, and it was very disturbing news. Bell's palsy, a virus thing. And the freshman year in high school is a bad time to have half your face paralyzed. But it helped me to develop more of a personality. You have to make fun of yourself, or else you're going to have a really rough life.
You were in a car motorcycle crash with your girlfriend, Sarah Larson. Given that recent accident, are your motorcycle days over?
No, I ride a motorcycle when I'm home in Los Angeles. It's my main mode of transportation. But what the photographers were doing was illegal. It's high-speed chases, and they're competing with each other. They're not trying to catch me doing something stupid. They're trying to create me doing something stupid. You don't get to break all these laws and then say that we're just doing our jobs. What they're doing is illegal. They're like bounty hunters. There are no rules now. And the accident happened in New Jersey, not in Los Angeles. The paparazzi shouldn't go 60 miles per hour down a one-way street.
Now listen to the same discussion in five sections. Look at questions 1 and 2. Now, we're going to hear an interview with George Clooney, a famous TV and movie actor, as well as political activist.
I'm thrilled to have George Clooney as our guest with me this morning. George, it's a real pleasure to have you here. If you don't mind, let's get right to my listeners' questions for you. Do you think celebrity activism has become cliché?
You don't want to be a spokesperson unless you're absolutely committed to a cause because you can hurt it. I have two electric cars, but I also have a big weak spot because I've flown on private jets. However, I welcome any of these dumb bloggers who make celebrities out to be bad guys to a discussion about Darfur. It's a real crisis center in Africa right now, because I've been there, and I've met all the players, and I guarantee you the columnists haven't.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at questions 3 and 4.
After all your advocacy work to help Darfur, why do you think the situation is not improving?
The president of Sudan doesn't have any incentive to do anything else. We can't sanction Sudan because we don't do trade with it. And the president of Sudan can frame any peacekeeping mission as a Western invasion of still another Muslim country. So people like the Chinese, who do business with these guys, have to say they're not going to trade with Sudan anymore. That's what it's going to come down to. Most countries are involved in almost everything they do only to protect their own self-interest. It would be naive to think that anyone is doing anything out of the goodness of their heart. I'm talking about my own country here.
Answer questions 3 and 4. Look at questions 5 and 6.
You were vocal about the paparazzi after Princess Diana's death. Who do you blame most for the current celebrity news frenzy?
After all, I'm the son of a television anchorman. My father, Nick, has worked for more TV stations than I care to remember. So I am a supporter of the freedom of the speech guaranteed by the U.S. law. I made a statement after Diana's death. I said that the only thing worse than out-of-control photographers with no sense of conscience would be trying to restrict them. You can't restrict freedom of speech or the press, even if it's miserable.
Answer questions 5 and 6, then look at questions 7 and 8.
How did having Bell's palsy affect who you are today?
Well, let me tell you about it. I was 15. After church one Sunday, I was eating lunch. When I went to drink a glass of milk, the milk dribbled down my chin as if my face had fallen asleep. My parents took me to the doctor, and it was very disturbing news. Bell's palsy, a virus thing. And the freshman year in high school is a bad time to have half your face paralyzed. But it helped me to develop more of a personality. You have to make fun of yourself, or else you're going to have a really rough life.
Answer questions 7 and 8. Look at questions 9 and 10.
You were in a car motorcycle crash with your girlfriend, Sarah Larson. Given that recent accident, are your motorcycle days over?
No, I ride a motorcycle when I'm home in Los Angeles. It's my main mode of transportation. But what the photographers were doing was illegal. It's high-speed chases, and they're competing with each other. They're not trying to catch me doing something stupid. They're trying to create me doing something stupid. You don't get to break all these laws and then say that we're just doing our jobs. What they're doing is illegal. They're like bounty hunters. There are no rules now. And the accident happened in New Jersey, not in Los Angeles. The paparazzi shouldn't go 60 miles per hour down a one-way street.
Answer questions 9 and 10. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
It's my pleasure to announce Marlene Randall. She's here to talk to us about the Great Storm of 1987.
In 1987, the Great Storm blew into southern England. The greatest damage occurred in the southeast. There, winds of 70 knots and more were recorded for 4 hours. People still remember the night between the 15th and 16th of October 1987. Hundreds of thousands of homes were without power for days. Downed trees blocked roads and railways. But people mainly remember the night as an ecological disaster. That night, we lost 15 million trees. But that memory can be blamed, as the misleading legend that it is. Since 1987, as many as 600 million new trees have been planted in the UK. So now the tree cover is more extensive than at any time in the last 150 years, and it's more than double what it was 100 years ago. If the storm had occurred a few weeks later, the damage to trees would have been far less. A mild, late autumn had meant that most trees were still in leaf. They shouldn't have been. But therefore, they offered more wind resistance. Furthermore, an exceptionally wet autumn meant root systems were soaking wet and couldn't hold out against the wind. But since the storm, the Forestry Commission has planted about 400 million additional trees, pines and firs. Conservationist Nick Collinson says that nearly all the pines have been planted on heathland and bogs, dry lands and wetlands. To many conservationists, this is not necessarily a matter for joy. The Forestry Commission has responded to the conservationists' criticism about the pines. In its reply, the Commission says broadleaf trees are now being planted at a rate greater than at any time in our history. Since 1993, the Commission has planted markedly more acres with leafy trees than pines. And behind the scenes, more work was going on. The National Trust started emergency plots to grow the rare plants and trees that had fallen. This was so that they could eventually bring back plants to replace them and save rare genetic material. A wholesale search began for the records, maps, and plans needed to begin restoration. And this led to a once-in-a-lifetime chance to plant afresh. Sadly, in the rush to tidy up and mend the storm's damage, few woods were left to recover by themselves. This was one of the storm's lessons. By clearing up using heavy machinery, you run the risk of doing far more damage than good. Trees have the ability to rise from what seems like disaster. There was another discovery as well. Ancient trees have been more flexible, hollow trunks, a lighter cover of leaves and deeper roots. They survived well, while younger, less wind-hardened, shallow-rooted trees fell over. If such an event ever happened again, however, policy might be rather different. We know now that in areas of woodland that were less managed, there are still lovely straight trees. But the real disaster for England's trees had been going on unnoticed for 50 years before the storm. During that time, the southeast lost about half of its leafy trees. Millions of oak, birch, beech, elm, and chestnut were cut down. The average amount of tree cover in the EU is 40%. In England, it's just 8.5%. And that's not the only disaster. As the forest was being replanted, climate change had to be taken into account. Shelter belts of tough trees now protect more valuable stands of forest. Protecting the trees from northeasterly winds is very important. But we should remember that there are oaks out there that are 600 years old, and they're storm resistant.
Now listen to the same interview in 5 sections. Look at questions 11 and 12.
It's my pleasure to announce Marlene Randall. She's here to talk to us about the Great Storm of 1987.
In 1987, the Great Storm blew into southern England. The greatest damage occurred in the southeast. There, winds of 70 knots and more were recorded for 4 hours. People still remember the night between the 15th and 16th of October 1987. Hundreds of thousands of homes were without power for days. Downed trees blocked roads and railways. But people mainly remember the night as an ecological disaster. That night, we lost 15 million trees. But that memory can be blamed as the misleading legend that it is. Since 1987, as many as 600 million new trees have been planted in the UK. So now the tree cover is more extensive than at any time in the last 150 years. And it's more than double what it was 100 years ago.
Answer questions 11 and 12, then look at questions 13 and 14.
If the storm had occurred a few weeks later, the damage to trees would have been far less. A mild, late autumn had meant that most trees were still in leaf. They shouldn't have been. But therefore, they offered more wind resistance. Furthermore, an exceptionally wet autumn meant root systems were soaking wet and couldn't hold out against the wind. But since the storm, the Forestry Commission has planted about 400 million additional trees, pines and firs. Conservationist Nick Collinson says that nearly all the pines have been planted on heathland and bogs, dry lands and wetlands. To many conservationists, this is not necessarily a matter for joy.
Answer questions 13 and 14. Look at questions 15 and 16.
The Forestry Commission has responded to the conservationists' criticism about the pines. In its reply, the Commission says broadleaf trees are now being planted at a rate greater than at any time in our history. Since 1993, the Commission has planted markedly more acres with leafy trees than pines. And behind the scenes, more work was going on. The National Trust started emergency plots to grow the rare plants and trees that had fallen. This was so that they could eventually bring back plants to replace them and save rare genetic material. A wholesale search began for the records, maps, and plans needed to begin restoration. And this led to a once-in-a-lifetime chance to plant afresh.
Answer questions 15 and 16, then look at questions 17 and 18.
Sadly, in the rush to tidy up and mend the storm's damage, few woods were left to recover by themselves. This was one of the storm's lessons. By clearing up using heavy machinery, you run the risk of doing far more damage than good. Trees have the ability to rise from what seems like disaster. There was another discovery as well. Ancient trees have been more flexible, hollow trunks, a lighter cover of leaves and deeper roots. They survived well, while younger, less wind-hardened, shallow-rooted trees fell over. If such an event ever happened again, however, policy might be rather different. We know now that in areas of woodland that were less managed, there are still lovely straight trees.
Answer questions 17 and 18. Look at questions 19 and 20.
But the real disaster for England's trees had been going on unnoticed for 50 years before the storm. During that time, the southeast lost about half of its leafy trees. Millions of oak, birch, beech, elm, and chestnut were cut down. The average amount of tree cover in the EU is 40%. In England, it's just 8.5%. And that's not the only disaster. As the forest was being replanted, climate change had to be taken into account. Shelter belts of tough trees now protect more valuable stands of forest. Protecting the trees from northeasterly winds is very important. But we should remember that there are oaks out there that are 600 years old, and they're storm resistant.
Answer questions 19 and 20. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
Well, I never. Now I've heard everything.
What do you mean?
Two men have been stealing birthday cards at the local post office.
How did they do that?
Well, they were employees, of course, got caught red-handed by their supervisors.
People are really stupid.
Answer question 21, then look at question 22.
Have you any idea what pub gossip can lead to?
Well, just about anywhere.
Nigel and Tracy got tired of the gossip at the local pub. Their two-year-old daughter is blonde, and they both have dark hair.
They should have just told people to shut up.
Maybe so. What they did was to get DNA tests run, and their daughter's DNA doesn't match either of them.
So what now?
Who knows? And how did it all happen? What's the real story?
Answer question 22. Look at question 23.
How often does a bird fly through a window?
Not very often. They usually bounce off, poor things.
But this was a 25-pound turkey. It came flying straight through a third-floor window, and the 83-year-old man in the apartment had to catch it himself. He tried a fishing pole, but then he grabbed hold of the turkey's neck and threw it out the window.
Wild. That's just wild.
Answer question 23, then look at question 24.
It wasn't a pleasant dinner at the restaurant. That's Cherie.
Yes, Cherie. But I set her rude behaviour down to a weak stomach.
I'm not altogether convinced. After all, the food was excellent. I don't know why she was in such a bad mood. But she has had some stomach trouble before, after all.
Answer question 24. Look at question 25.
Did you see Bill and Phyllis's new car?
I'll say, that car was neither fish nor fowl. It must have been made out of spare parts.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've never seen anything like it.
Answer question 25. This is the fourth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section twice, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A. Listen to this section.
In Florida, the cities of Coral Gables and Orlando both used the nickname the City Beautiful. Both had used the slogan for decades, but Coral Gables applied last year for a federal trademark seeking exclusive rights to the slogan. Orlando filed an objection blocking the application, and the two sides reached a deal last week. In the central and northern area, Orlando can use the nickname in promotional materials in nearby counties. And down south, Coral Gables can use it in brochures and PR in close-by counties. However, Orlando and Coral Gables did not agree on which city was more beautiful.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
In Florida, the cities of Coral Gables and Orlando both used the nickname the City Beautiful. Both had used the slogan for decades, but Coral Gables applied last year for a federal trademark seeking exclusive rights to the slogan. Orlando filed an objection blocking the application, and the two sides reached a deal last week. In the central and northern area, Orlando can use the nickname in promotional materials in nearby counties. And down south, Coral Gables can use it in brochures and PR in close-by counties. However, Orlando and Coral Gables did not agree on which city was more beautiful.
Read question B. Question B, listen to this section.
Only 4 weeks ago, the German Central Bank's building in Berlin was officially opened after renovation work. And a week later, a Berlin hairdresser discovered top-secret plans for a safety vault. He went to throw away the rubbish and noticed a plastic bag with the building sketches in the bin. The papers were marked secret. They revealed all the details of the vault.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Only 4 weeks ago, the German Central Bank's building in Berlin was officially opened after renovation work. And a week later, a Berlin hairdresser discovered top-secret plans for a safety vault. He went to throw away the rubbish and noticed a plastic bag with the building sketches in the bin. The papers were marked secret. They revealed all the details of the vault.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section.
In New Delhi, police decided it was time to start enforcing a 27-year-old rule against jaywalking. New Delhi pedestrians are used to taking their chances with the Delhi traffic. At six busy New Delhi intersections on Thursday, police officers issued jaywalkers tickets and made them pay 20 rupee fines. Office workers complained that in many locations there's no crossing at all. And so in the city's commercial district, a troop of city workers in woolly jumpers and trousers were hastily sent out to paint new zebra crossings. One can only guess whether this will have any influence on the situation.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
In New Delhi, police decided it was time to start enforcing a 27-year-old rule against jaywalking. New Delhi pedestrians are used to taking their chances with the Delhi traffic. At six busy New Delhi intersections on Thursday, police officers issued jaywalkers tickets and made them pay 20 rupee fines. Office workers complained that in many locations, there's no crossing at all. And so in the city's commercial district, a troop of city workers in woolly jumpers and trousers were hastily sent out to paint new zebra crossings. One can only guess whether this will have any influence on the situation.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section.
And last Tuesday, American researchers said a standard vacuum cleaner kills fleas just as well as any poison. And there's no need to worry that a vacuum cleaner bag may turn into a flea bag breeding ground for these nasty biting creatures. The researchers suggested that the vacuum wears away a waxy outer layer on the insects. Without this waxy, oily layer, the fleas probably dry up and die. The findings were so surprising that the researchers ran their experiments several times.
Now listen to this again, and then answer the question.
And last Tuesday, American researchers said a standard vacuum cleaner kills fleas just as well as any poison. And there's no need to worry that a vacuum cleaner bag may turn into a flea bag breeding ground for these nasty biting creatures. The researchers suggested that the vacuum wears away a waxy outer layer on the insects. Without this waxy, oily layer, the fleas probably dry up and die. The findings were so surprising that the researchers ran their experiments several times.
Read question E. Question E. Listen to this section.
You know, it's really scary being a little yummy squirrel, but some species of the rodents have come up with a frightening disguise, snake smells. California ground squirrels and rock squirrels chew up rattlesnake skin and then lick their fur to mask their own scent. The rattlesnake scent probably helps to mask the squirrel's own smell. They're getting back at the snakes, which fear each other, and do so for good reason.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
You know, it's really scary being a little yummy squirrel. But some species of the rodents have come up with a frightening disguise, snake smells. California ground squirrels and rock squirrels chew up rattlesnake skin and then lick their fur to mask their own scent. The rattlesnake scent probably helps to mask the squirrel's own smell. They're getting back at the snakes, which fear each other, and do so for good reason.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet, your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.